We've just published the book, The Adventures of Lola Badiola. It's the perfect complement for this podcast. It includes complete transcripts, explanations, and quizzes. So buy it now on Amazon. Hello and welcome back to The Adventures of Lola Badiola. In the last episode, Park suspected that there were intruders in his apartment. In this episode, we're going to find out if his suspicions were justified. So here we go.
The Adventures of Lola Badiola. Chapter 36. Knife. Park jumped up onto his feet and grabbed a knife from his kitchen countertop. It still had some kimchi sauce on it, but it was sharp and would do the trick. He slowly and silently walked up to his bedroom door and listened carefully. There was no sound from within. He closed his eyes and counted to three. One, two, three. Then he burst into the room, screaming at the top of his voice and slashing the air with his kitchen knife. There was nobody there. His bedroom and bathroom were empty. He checked all the cupboards and curtains and found nothing and nobody else in the apartment. The intruders had long since left the premises. He sat down on his bed and let the adrenaline dissipate through his body. Gradually, his normal breathing returned, and he came back to his senses. He needed to think clearly. He needed to plan his next move. He was a brilliant problem solver and tactician. That's what made him such an effective hacker. Now, more than ever, he needed to rely on his resourcefulness. There were three layers of law enforcement in North Korea. The first, and most obvious, was the police force. Over 150,000 security personnel employed to maintain public order and investigate criminal activity. They wore uniforms and carried badges. They walked the streets and directed traffic. They were the public face of the Ministry of Security Affairs. The second layer of law enforcement was the Baoibu, or the secret police. Nobody knew exactly how many officers were employed in this division, but it was several times the number of uniformed policemen. They were responsible for capturing dissidents and preventing anti-government activities. They ran the internment and re-education camps for political prisoners. The third and final layer of law enforcement, the most feared and revered, were the Special Operations Forces, or SOF. They were an independent organization charged with the protection of Kim Jong-un himself. They had the authority to carry out preemptive strikes against any threat, real or imaginary, against the Supreme Leader. If a factory full of striking workers burned down with the staff inside, if an aeroplane full of government officials flew into a mountain, if a notable family was massacred at a wedding, the SOF was probably behind it. Park knew how the three layers of law enforcement operated. He had seen each of them in action. The people who worked for the regular and secret police were, like so many government workers, functionaries doing their jobs to put bread on the table. He believed that he was smart enough to stay one step ahead of them. The agents of the SOF were a different category altogether. They had the intelligence, the equipment, and above all the psychological commitment to track down and eliminate anyone they felt was a threat. They were, as Kim had once described them, an army of terminators. As Park's senses gradually returned to him, he became aware of a strong smell in his bedroom, a smell that was familiar. It was sweet, floral, and somewhat acrid. He got up, walked over to his bathroom and opened the door. The smell became even stronger. It was the distinct essence of dragon aftershave. He looked closely at the bottle of pungent perfume on the shelf in his bathroom and noticed two things that were wrong. Firstly, the bottle was positioned with the logo facing inwards. Secondly, the level of fluid had dropped from earlier that morning. Whoever had been in Park's apartment had helped themselves to a large quantity of his most treasured possession. Park's emotions had been on a roller coaster that day, from hope to paranoia to fear, and now, finally, he was moved to anger. Was there nothing sacred in this society? The fatherland had taken his talent, his best friend, and now his aftershave, the one thing that made him feel unique and human. He could not contain his bitterness and resentment. He attacked the air around him with the knife in his hand, stabbing an imaginary Kang, slashing the two secret policemen, cutting the jugular vein of the supreme leader and watching him collapse on the bedroom floor in a pool of blood. This physical expression of his inner emotions made him feel much better. It allowed him to release the adrenaline that had built up in his system. And for a moment, it made him feel powerful. In the background, he heard the 8 p.m. news starting on the television. It brought him back to the present moment. And he suddenly remembered that he needed to be somewhere at 8 p.m. He remembered that he needed to be sitting on a bench in Chung Hwa Park with the girl with the almond eyes. He was already late for his date. He ripped off his clothes and jumped in the shower. Then he got dressed, fixed his hair, and grabbed his Russian coat. In one pocket, he placed the bottle of aftershave. He didn't want to risk losing any more of his most valued commodity. In the other pocket, he placed the kitchen knife, just in case he had to defend himself. Despite all the uncertainty in his life, despite all the questions surrounding his future at the Ministry of Information, there was one thing of which he was sure. Park Jae-bong was not going to die a virgin.
So, the pressure is really starting to build in Park's professional and personal life. Will he die a virgin? Time will tell. But right now, let's focus on some common expressions. Have a listen to these sentences again. Here we go.
Park jumped up onto his feet and grabbed a knife from his kitchen countertop. It still had some kimchi sauce on it, but it was sharp and would do the trick.
If something does the trick, it achieves exactly what you wanted. It gets the desired result. So, for example, you might say, I apologized to her, and it seemed to do the trick. Or, we replaced the battery in the car engine, and it's done the trick. In the case of Park, the kimchi knife will do the trick. In other words, it's exactly what he needs to attack the intruders with. Okay, here's the next one.
The people who worked for the regular and secret police were, like so many government workers, functionaries doing their jobs to put bread on the table.
To put bread on the table. This means to earn enough money to cover the basic necessities for you and for your family. For example, you might say, I go to work every day to put bread on the table for this family. Now, in our short story, the secret police are not necessarily psychologically committed to their job. They, like other functionaries, are simply doing it to put bread on the table, to provide for their families. Okay, here's our third and final common expression.
Park's emotions had been on a roller coaster that day, from hope to paranoia to fear.
If you say that someone is on a roller coaster, you mean that they are going through many sudden and extreme changes in a short period of time. Now, it's normally associated with emotional turbulence. It can be both exciting and sickening. So, for example, you might say, the last week has been crazy in the financial markets. I've been on a complete roller coaster watching my investments go up and down. Okay, now let's move on to some phrasal verbs. We have three of them. Here's the first.
Then he burst into the room, screaming at the top of his voice and slashing the air with his kitchen knife.
To burst into, in the most basic sense, means to suddenly enter a room, as is the case with Park at this moment in the story. But this phrasal verb has a more general meaning, which is to begin to produce or do something all of a sudden. So, for example, it's very common to hear people say, he burst into laughter, or he burst into tears, or the house burst into flames. The commonality between all these uses of this phrasal verb is the fact that some change of state happens suddenly and dramatically. Okay, here's our second phrasal verb.
They had the authority to carry out preemptive strikes against any threat, real or imaginary, against the supreme leader.
To carry out is to do or complete something, especially something that you have said you would do or that you've been told to do. So, for example, the hospital is carrying out tests to discover the cause of her pain. Or you might say, don't blame me, I'm only carrying out my instructions. And in our story, the SOF have the authority to carry out preemptive strikes against any threat. Okay, here's our third and final phrasal verb. Listen up.
If a factory full of striking workers burned down with the staff inside.
To burn down. This is to destroy something, especially a building, by fire. Now, there's a very popular song by the 1980s band Talking Heads called Burning Down the House. And a few years later, it was covered by Tom Jones. So you may have heard it on the radio. It goes a little something like this. Burning down the house. Do you recognize it? Burning down the house. Well, I'm afraid that's the only line of the song that I know, so I can't give you any more clues. But it's a very famous tune written by Talking Heads and covered by Tom Jones. Listen out for it on the radio. I'm sure you're going to hear it at some point in the future. Still a very popular song. Okay, let's finally discuss some interesting vocabulary. Have a listen to these sentences again.
He needed to plan his next move. He was a brilliant problem solver and tactician. That's what made him such an effective hacker. Now, more than ever, he needed to rely on his resourcefulness.
Resourcefulness. This is the ability to find quick and clever ways to overcome your difficulties. It's the skill of problem solving, of making decisions on your own, of making the most of the resources that you have. So, for example, in a sentence you might say, we are looking for resourceful salespeople who can find original ways to penetrate the market. Think back to a time when you failed to do something. You failed to lose weight. You failed to improve your English or to pass a test. You failed to hit your financial targets or get your business off the ground. Why did you fail? Was it because of a lack of time? A lack of money? A lack of technology? In other words, did you fail because of a lack of resources? Well, according to the world's most famous motivational guru, Tony Robbins, you did not fail because of a lack of resources. Failure is never because of a lack of resources. Failure is a result of a lack of resourcefulness, the inability to find clever ways to overcome your problem. In other words, it's not external factors that are holding you back. It is internal factors that are holding you back, that are making you fail. If you are creative enough, can you find the answer? Yes or no? If you are determined enough, can you make the breakthrough? Yes or no? If you are passionate and loving enough, can you get someone to help you? Yes or no? These are the questions that Tony Robbins, the great motivational speaker, will be asking you to ask yourself. And then he will say, some of the most successful people in history had very few resources and they still succeeded. They succeeded because they were creative, they were determined, and they were passionate. In other words, they were incredibly resourceful. Resourcefulness is the key to success. Right, let's move on to something completely different with our final word of the day. Listen to these phrases again. Here we go.
They were, as Kim had once described them, an army of Terminators.
An army of Terminators. Do you know what I'm referring to with the word Terminator? It is, of course, the main character, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, in the film of the same name, from 1984, directed by James Cameron. In modern life, there are so many cultural references to this film. To give you just one example, when Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of Great Britain between 2019 and 2022, was forced to resign, the very last thing he said in his final speech to Parliament was the following. Hasta la vista, baby. That is a direct quote from Terminator 2. And it was instantly recognisable by all the other politicians and by the public in general. Boris Johnson was telling the world that he was leaving, but he was implying that he would at some point be back. Hasta la vista, baby. Now, the American Film Institute has a list of the top 100 most famous phrases in movie history. And Hasta la vista, baby, from Terminator 2, is the 76th most famous, most quoted line in movie history. But there's an even more famous line, famous phrase, from the original Terminator film that is 37th on the all-time list. Do you know what sentence it is? I'll give you my best Arnold Schwarzenegger impression as I tell you what it is. Are you ready?
I'll be back.
I need to practice a little bit harder. Incidentally, can you guess the number one most famous line, most famous phrase in American movie history? I'll give you a clue. The film is Gone with the Wind. And it's said by Rhett Butler as he walks away from Scarlett O'Hara for the final time. And it's the following phrase. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. And on that note, we come to the end of today's session. If you'd like to improve your English in a more formal manner, please join Marina and me for live and interactive online classes. Just search Club Grattan and you will find us. In the meantime, keep bringing English into your life, and we hope that you can join us for the next podcast. The only thing left for me to say right now is hasta la vista, baby.